ברוך אתה אדינו אלינו מלך העולם שהכל נהיה בדברו. Okay, continuing our introduction to Maseches Makos, this next part, we already discussed yesterday, we'll just briefly go it over. Okay, the next concept, as I said, is Hachachosha, as opposed to Hazama. Hachachosha means contradictory testimony. So, Hazama, that we learned yesterday, applies only in the limited, clearly defined case described above. Where the second set of witnesses, how could you have testified you were with us somewhere else at that? That's Hazama, and we have falsified those witnesses. Any other means of refutation of the first two witnesses, even if the victim of an alleged murder appears in the courtroom alive and well, though conclusive in its refutation of the witnesses, does not render them zomimim, and therefore does not subject them to the punishment decreed for zomimim witnesses. In other words, the only case is if there are people that said you could not have testified because you were not here. The fact that the murder victim shows up has not shown that they could not have testified. Now, it's pretty difficult to understand that. We'll see on Daf Hey, we'll discuss that. We'll discuss it. We're just doing introductions now. Okay, but that doesn't work. If the testimony is contradicted by that of other witnesses, a situation known as hachechosha, it's another term you've got to know, contradictory testimony, there's no reason to accept one set as more truthful than the other. Even if one set of witnesses consists of numerous people, while the other set is the testimony of only two, halacha does not favor one set over the other. Two people say this happened, 100 people say that happened. Doesn't matter, it's contradictory testimony. Since the Torah credits the testimony of two witnesses as valid, larger and smaller sets of witnesses have equal validity. This is the principle the Gemara calls Trei, two, Kameya are like 100. Thus, if the testimony of all the witnesses leaves us with two clearly conflicting versions of the events, each supported by at least two witnesses, the impasse cannot be resolved on the basis of their testimony. Let me go back to that paragraph before just to massage it a little bit. So we're going to say if two witnesses said that Chaim killed Shlomo on Sunday morning, and then the case in the court is on Wednesday, and then Shlomo walks in. So you're going to say, well, why wouldn't we kill these witnesses? Is there no greater Hazama than that? The answer is no, and let me explain. What if I have two pairs of witnesses, two say A happened and two say B happened? Well, now, what do I say? Well, clearly somebody's wrong. Now, here's the important point. Witnesses can always be wrong, but does that necessarily mean they have evil intent? In other words, if you'll go to a crime scene and there'll be 10 witnesses, is it possible you're going to get more than one version of the story?
Sure.
Is it? Does it necessarily mean that the person has evil intent in their reporting?
No.
When you see something as, dramatic as a murder or a robbery, do you think, like, your mind gets affected a little bit by that?
Sure.
This trauma?
Yes.
Okay, so, and therefore, you may not give over exactly. That's the job of the Bezdin, you see, is to interrogate thoroughly, to get clearly what they saw, what they didn't see, to make sure it works out right. So when I've got two conflicting pairs of witnesses, we don't walk out and say, well, one of them must be a terrible bunch of guys. No, it could be they didn't accurately testify. They may have meant well. Now, let's say that, you know, two witnesses say that Chaim killed Shimon on Sunday. Now, they could very well have seen a murder, and it could be they thought it was Shimon, but really it was Levi who got killed. Now, Shimon walks in. Shimon's not saying there's no way you could have testified to a murder because you weren't in town. He's just saying, you know what? You've got the wrong testimony. It's a conflicting testimony. What would it be different if another two witnesses would come and not say you couldn't have been there, but they just said, no, we know that Shimon is still alive, or Reuven did not kill Shimon on Sunday. It's conflicting witnesses. In other words, the Eidim Zomimim applies when it's incontrovertible that these two guys are liars. Now, how is it incontrovertible? When two witnesses say, how could you have testified to what happened on Sunday morning in Toronto when you were there Sunday morning in Boston? That means there's no way you could have testified this. We've invalidated the testimony from its inception, and there's only one conclusion we can draw, is that you intended to be false witnesses. If the murder victim walks in, that does not prove that these witnesses intended to be false witnesses. Could be their testimony or something they saw, but they weren't accurate. There's a big difference between a lack of accuracy and clearly malicious intent. Do you hear the difference? So, of course, we throw the case out because the victim has walked into court. We throw the case out, and they say, oh, I guess we misunderstood. So what? You know, could be they thought he killed him. Could be Reuven and Shimon were in a fight, and Shimon, it looked like he killed Shimon. You know, he took a knife, stabbed him in the body, and then Shimon ain't moving. Oh, he killed him. And then doesn't come to court for 3 weeks. Could be doesn't come to court for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Guess what? Shimon recovered. So you're going to say these were vicious, malicious people? Well, it looked like he killed him. He stabbed him. The guy wasn't moving for 10 minutes. So that's the incorrect testimony. It's a difference in incorrect testimony and malicious evil intent. All right, so that massages that a little bit. Okay, here's the terms you have to know that we're not going to be translating anymore. Hazama, the process by which witnesses are proven false by testimony that places them elsewhere at the time the alleged incident occurred. Hazama penalty, the punishment imposed on witnesses proven false by the process of hazama, subjecting them to the same consequences, such as payment or corporal punishment, they sought to impose by their testimony. Refer to this also as reciprocal penalty. Malchus means lashes imposed by the court as punishment for violations of biblical law. Zomamim, witnesses proven false through Hazama. So those four Hebrew terms, from now on I assume you're going to know what they mean. Okay, so I'm not going to translate them. Okay, with that we begin now Maseches Makos. By the way, bear this in mind, Makos means the same as Malchus, lashes. The name of the tractate is Maseches Makos. Keep that in mind because I'm going to ask a very difficult question either today or tomorrow based on that. Okay, the name of the tractate is Makos, is lashes. Okay, keep that in mind. All right, so we start with the Mishnah. Read all this. Ketzad ha'edim na'asim zomamim. What does that mean? In what manner do witnesses become zomamim? Okay, that's the question. Now, good luck with the answer. Okay, and maybe you'll come up with the Gemara's question on your own. Gemara's saying, what's a case of zomamim witnesses? All right, here's the case. Me'idim anu be'ish ploni, two fellows say we testified about this particular person, shu ben gerusha o ben chalutza. They're testifying against the Kohen. And they testify, the Kohen has been working for the last number of years as a legitimate Kohen. These guys come along and say, well, I want you to know that 20 years ago, Mrs. Cohen, okay, who married Mr. Cohn, right? He married Mr. Cohn 15 years ago, okay? And 20 years ago, she got divorced from a man, an Israelite. We testify that this woman was divorced or received a chalitza. Chalitza is when you're supposed to the midst of Yibum and you refuse to do the midst of Yibum, so the woman takes the shoe off of the man. So, rabbinically, we put that in the same category as divorcee. Okay? So, they're testifying that 20 years ago, this woman was divorced from a man. That's all they're testifying. But what's going to come out of that testimony? Well, now what happened is the Kohen that marries this woman was not supposed to marry her. Correct?
Right.
Now, what happens when they have a child? What's the status of the child? When a Kohen marries a divorcee or a chalutza, what's the status of that child? He's a Kohen. Yeah, he is a Kohen by descent, but he's called a chalal, a disqualified Kohen, which has all kinds of applications, because number one, he can't serve in the temple. He's going to loses a lot of privileges. And that's what these guys are testifying. So really, this testimony is relating to the kid. You follow? They're saying this person, he is now, this Kohen that is serving now, we go back 25, 30 years, he really is the son of a divorcee that married a Kohen. Or the son of a woman who got a chalitza, who is a Kohen. Right? And as we said, a Kohen's forbidden by the Torah to marry a divorcee, and rabbinically to marry a chalutza, because they're very similar. Okay, we're not going through the whole mitzvah of Yibum. Okay, and that child is called a Kohen, a chalal. He does not have the sanctity of a Kohen and is in all respects like an ordinary Yisrael, which means he's forbidden to eat truma, where on the other hand, he's permitted to become tummy to a corpse. So what are these guys really doing to this guy? What's their testimony effectively doing?
Disqualify him as a Kohen.
And also, therefore, what? What's more important? He can't work as a Kohen, but he also loses all the financial benefits of being a Kohen. Imagine a guy's been going to a number of Jewish homes and picking up truma, 2% of their crops, like that. He's been receiving 25 different gifts that go on and get. Okay? Okay, twice a year he gets to go to the Beis HaMikdash and work for 2 weeks. And on holidays he can work. But everything about bingo and all the benefits he gets, he loses.
So, Rabbi, could he in the future marry a Kohen? A woman?
No, he cannot perform anything.
Can he marry a Kohen woman? Well, marrying a Kohen woman doesn't help you any.
No, because he's lost his privileges as a Kohen.
Yeah, but that's because I'll tell you, a Kohen girl can marry Yisrael.
Yeah.
So that's not a problem.
Yeah.
The problem over here is their testimony has financially and spiritually affected this fellow. That's what these witnesses say. Okay, now, you got the case?
Yeah.
So now they take this to Beis Din. Got to take this to Beis Din. Right? Take the Bezin. Bezin asks, well, what happened? What happened 25 years ago? Well, we saw this woman, Mrs. Cohn. She wasn't Mrs. Cohn then. Then she was Mrs. Schwartz. And Mr. Schwartz, we saw him hand her a bill of divorce. We don't know about anything else. We don't know who she married. We just know this. And we know that this Yankel Cohen, this young Cohen who's serving, is his mother's a divorcee. Fine. Beis Din says, okay, we heard the information, the question back, okay, we've decided, Yankel Cohen, you're no longer a Kohen. We've made that.
Well, you're a Kohen halal.
You're a Kohen halal. Mm-hmm. Okay, then two more witnesses come, and they now are going to create hazama of the first pair. And they're going to say, you could not have testified that Mr. Schwartz divorced Mrs. Schwartz on this date in this place. Because you were with us in another country at this time.
Yeah.
So we have Adim Zomamim on their testimony that this guy was a Kohen who became a halal because the father married a divorcee. Let's just take it one precious step further. And these two witnesses who lied are Kohanim. Just to sweeten up the pot a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, what would you, our esteemed Beis Din here, based on the limited knowledge you have, only learned this for one day, what would you think the law should be?
They become disqualified.
Right? They should become disqualified. Wouldn't that fit into the process of you do to them as they intended to do to the other guy? Okay. So, looky here. Let's just see if there's anything else over here. No, it's all the same. So what the Mishnah says, Ein Omrim, we don't say Yaseh zeh ben grusha o ben chalutza tachtov. We do not say that these witnesses should be considered the son of a divorcee or the son of a chalutza in his place, which you would have thought, because the Torah says you shall do to him as he planned to do to his brother. Rather, Ella loke arboim, he gets lashes, 40 lashes, which we'll learn later on when the Torah says 40 lashes, it means 39, and we'll discuss later what it means. But they lash him. Now, of course, there's a big problem of our understanding. Why do they not become ben gerushas? Why do they not do it? And number two, where is this lashing coming from? Okay, that the Gemara will discuss. I mean, that's the problem. That's a problem. Good? Gemara's going to discuss it at length. Okay?
Yeah, well, you can't change a person's status. You can penalize them financially, but you can't change they are where they are. They're still a coin, regardless.
The witnesses lose the privileges.
Yeah.
No, well, the witnesses remain going, but they get lashes.
Well, that's what that was.
You can't change a person's status like that.
The victim would have changed.
All right, I hear your question. Can they change
his status?
Can they change his financial privileges?
They could penalize financially.
So we're going to give you the status of a chol. That you can't work in the Beis Hamikdash and you lose all your financial things. As far as we're concerned, you are now treated as a chol.
Yeah.
Okay, that you could do, because what do they want? They want the guy to lose money, so you're going to lose money. Right? You want to work in the Beis Hamikdash? You don't get to work in the Beis Hamikdash.
They become halal, Kohen halal.
I'm just saying, we don't say this anyway. We don't say this. So Shelley is coming from a logic point of view.
See, how could
Shelley's saying, you know, you could kill somebody because he lied. You can kill him. That's the punishment. You can lash him. You can take money away from him. But if he isn't a chalal, how can you make him a chol? That's Shelley's point. Okay. So hold that thought. But we say no. So but now the question is, so we're not going to do what we should have been doing to him. So now it comes out we're going to give him lashes. Okay, where is that coming from? The Gemara will discuss. Okay, let's look at another interesting case. Me'irim anu be'ish ploni. Two witnesses testified somebody. Shuchayev golos. That this fellow has to go into exile. What does that mean? Two witnesses say, we saw Chaim unintentionally kill Levi. And they testify all the details. And the Beis Din says, oh, he killed? Okay. The Beis Din rules he should go to an Ir HaMiklot. The guy has to go to a city of refuge. Okay. Then, a little bit later, two other witnesses says, how could you have testified that Chaim killed Levi? You were with us out of town. So now you guys were liars. So what would you assume the law should be if we follow the rules of Azama according to the letter of the law? We should send these two guys to exile.
But
look what the Mishnah says. Ein omrim. We don't say Yagala Zetachtov. We also don't say that these guys go into exile instead of the original guy. Ela loy karboim. Rather, they get 40 lashes as well. Okay, so now let's recap the Mishnah again. And let's see if we can deduce the Gemara's question that's going to happen. What was the opening line of the Gemara, the Mishnah? The opening line was, in what manner do witnesses become Zomamim? That was the question. What did the two examples show us? That they don't become Zomamim. So you usually don't ask the question, how do you get A, and they explain how you get B. Or how you don't get A.
Well, they become Zomamim. They just don't get the punishment.
They just don't get the same punishment.
Okay. If I want to give an example of how to A to become Zomamim, could you not have thought of a simpler example of what's exactly what happens? If I say, how do witnesses become Zomamim? Two guys testify that Reuven killed Shimon intentionally and should get killed.
Yeah.
And now they get two other witnesses, you were liars, and they get killed.
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be like the simplest example?
Yeah, of course.
Wouldn't you come up with, well, I don't know, how do they become
exceptions.
Zomim? And they're really not, and remember, what's Zomimim? We do to them as they wanted to do to others. That's what the Torah says. All right? Torah says if you catch these guys lying, they are ein zomim. Now, what do we do to them? We give that. The Torah says clearly, we give them what they wanted to do. When I hear this question, in what manner do witnesses become zomimim? I'm assuming to find an answer of an example of what the Torah was describing.
Yeah.
Are the two cases of the Mishnah giving me an example of what the Torah is describing?
No.
That is going to make the Gemara troubled. And that's what the Gemara is going to ask two questions, which are really, it's like one, but it's two sides of the same coin. The Gemara asks, if you just gave me two cases where the witnesses are not really treated like Zomimim, because they don't get the punishment they got, then the Mishnah should have started the wording a little differently. Huh? The Mishnah should have said, Ketzad ein ha'edim nasim zomimim mi boyle. It should have said, how do witnesses not become zomimim? Because they're not exactly being treated like it, because the Mishnah proceeds to present case in which the fallen do not receive the penalty they sought to impose on their victim. Number one, the word you want to say, how do they not become Zomimim? Yeah. Well, that's how they don't become Zomimim. Because remember, Zomimim means you give them what they wanted to get. You're giving them some punishment, but that's not the standard punishment. The Od, we're asked a second question when we get later on to Daf Heyam and Aleph. Mediktani lik come on, when you're going to see in the Mishnah later on. The Mishnah later on gives us the most classical example of Eidim Zomimim. It says in the next, not the next one, but further down, Daf Hei Amud Aleph, the Mishnah says it black and white. Aval Amru Lahem, at the middle of the Mishnah, it says, but if a second set of witnesses said to the first set of witnesses, Hey Chatem Meidim, how could you testify about this and that? You were in another place, another time. The Mishnah there says, "Hare elu zomimim." They are zomimim. Now that's the real classic case of an example of Eidim Zomimim. In other words, on Daf Heyam et Aleph, the Mishnah gives us precisely what the classic case of Eidim Zomimim.
The second set of witnesses.
Yes, when a second set of witnesses says, "How could the first set have testified? You were with us at another time." So Daf Hei Amud Aleph clearly defines what the classic case of Eidim Zomimim is. So since that Mishnah teaches the mechanics of Zomim witnesses, there's no reason for the Tana here to ask the very same question, in what manner do witnesses become Zomim? What are you asking right here? How do Eidim become Zomim? Number one, you're not even telling me the classic case of how they become. They're not really zomimed, as it were, per se, because they're not getting the punishment they wanted to give the guy. And number two, on Daf Hamid Aleph, the Mishnah clearly tells us exactly what Eidim Zomimim is, implying that what we're talking about now is not. So that's the two sides of the coin of the question. Do you hear
Yes.
the question?
Yes.
If you want to tell me how to Eidim become Zomim, number one, Daf Hei Amud Aleph, the Mishnah tells me exactly what it is. Number two, why you tell me how they are, so say how they aren't Zomimim. That's the double barrel question. Yeah?
That's assuming that the second set of witnesses are true.
Yes, we always assume that.
We don't know that either.
No, the Torah says, when a second set of witnesses says, we always assume two witnesses are true.
Why can't we assume that the first one was?
No, again, that's what we talked about yesterday.
Whenever
you have two witnesses coming into a court, the assumption is they're telling the truth.
Right.
Now, okay. So when the first pair of witnesses come, the Bezin asked them questions, they were able to pass the questioning, Bezin assumes they're true. When a second set comes, remember, the first set were testifying about a murder case.
Okay.
Second set are testifying about what?
The witnesses.
About the witnesses, where they were.
Right.
Okay, those two witnesses are testifying against the first two witnesses. We will believe the second witnesses too. We always assume everyone's telling the truth.
Right.
Until they are disproved. And that's what the Torah is telling us. When two witnesses come into court and say, you two are liars and we could prove it because you were not there at the time you said you were.
If a third set comes...
Let's not worry about a third set. We'll get to that. Let's not complicate it. We'll talk about it, but we're not going to get there yet. The Torah believes the second set because it's not conflicting testimony.
That's why
we believe them. So this is the question of the Gemara. Why are we starting off by saying, how do you become Zomimim? And you give us an example where they don't become classical Zomimim. Number two, the later Mishnah, Andaf Hemet Aleph, gives us exactly what Zomim are, assuming therefore everything until that point is not Zomim. So why do we start off with the words, Ketzad Ha'edim Nasim Zomim? How do Edim become Zomim? You're not telling me that. What the Gemara is going to basically answer is that this Mishnah, remember, the Maseches Makos follows in the order of the Talmud Maseches Sanhedrin. That we learned. Maseches Sanhedrin, according to Gemara, even though the last chapter we learned was the chapter dealing with those of a portion of the world to come. That was chapter 11. It was a lot of agato. But there's a lot of discussion if that's actually chapter 11 or if it's chapter 10. And really, chapter 10 is chapter 11. Okay, fine. Everything until the 11th chapter was really laws of Sanhedrin, laws of this, laws of that. Chapter 11, you notice, was a totally different chapter. It's mostly agato. You know, who gets a share of the world to come, this and that. So obviously this Gemara's edition of Maseches Sanhedrin felt that the 11th chapter is chapter 10, and chapter 10 is chapter 11. So therefore it comes out the end of chapter 10 is the end of Maseches Sanhedrin. Now, the Gemara is going to say, quite often when you start, now, and Makos is like not like, it's a totally different realm of Jewish law than Sanhedrin. You know, it's exactly the same type of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Sanhedrin's dealing with courts and torts and all this stuff and, you know, witnesses and all this stuff, punishments and this and that. So if you notice, Sanhedrin's about 114 pages. Makos is 23 pages. So Makos is like a tag-along to Sanhedrin. You know, you'll look in a Shas, you'll see Sanhedrin. Sometimes Makos in the binder is the one that's right next to it. So Sanhedrin is like the ending of Sanhedrin. So it's post-Sanhedrin. So therefore, there's a continuity. So therefore, Moore's going to say, well, let's look at the last Mishnah in Sanhedrin. And we're going to see that this first Mishnah Makos is just continuing what was left off in Sanhedrin.
In chapter 10,
which really was the end of Sanhedrin. And if you know what the context of that last law is, you'll see that this one is just following up on that context. Now we got to know what's going on at the end of Sanhedrin to now know the context. And once you know that, then things will be clear. You're going to see the Mishnah's intent was not to tell us how they become Zomimim at all. Because it knows on Daf Hey it's going to say Zomim. So it's starting, even though it's not starting in a classical way, but it's a continuity of the last Mishnah in Sanhedrin, and therefore it'll make sense. So now we got to go back and know what's going on the end of Sanhedrin, and then we're not going to finish this today. I only got 5 minutes to go. But we'll start, and we'll just see what's going on there. So Tana, the Tana here, the Tana of this Mishnah, Hasam over there, Koi is referring. So when the Tana here says, how do Edim Zomimim, how do they become Zomimim? He's going back on what's going on in the previous Maseches Sanhedrin. And let's see what it says, the last law that's relevant in the Mishnah to Maseches Sanhedrin says the following. Kol HaZomimim, the last Mishnah Sanhedrin talks about Edim Zomimim. All Zomimim Maktimim La'osamisa. They all are led with the death that they wanted to give to the victim. And let's say you said the guy's Machal Shabbos. What's the death penalty of a Machal Shabbos? Which one of the four death penalties is it? Stoning. So the law is when you're caught as a false witness and the guy was not Machal Shabbos, you couldn't have testified to that.
You get stoned.
You get exactly the death penalty you wanted to give this guy. Chutz, with the following exception. So you already see there's a Mishnah saying there's exceptions to Edim Zomimim. So this Mishnah is going to be a continuity of exceptions to Edim Zomimim. But what's the case over there? Chutz mi Zomimim bas kohen ubala. What if they lie about the daughter of a Kohen who was acted immorally with another Jew? And we had a long discussion about that. Big machlokasim, etc., etc. Now, what happens? What's normal immorality? A regular, classical Israelite man, Israelite woman, the punishment is strangulation. Strangulation for regular immorality. What's the punishment for the daughter of a Kohen for regular immorality? Burning. Burning. So we got an interesting scenario over here. These guys falsely testified that this man and this daughter of a Kohen were immoral together. And then they're proven false. Now the question is, well, what death penalty are you going to give them? Because on the one hand, they're making her get burnt. They're making him get strangled. Clearly, everybody agrees, what's the stricter punishment there? Even the machlokas or Shema Chomei, the stricter death penalty is burning. So, although we normally give the witnesses exactly what they wanted to give, the exception will be when they falsely testify about a daughter of a Kohen with another man that are acting immorally. She'ein makdimim la'osa misa. We don't give them that form of punishment, the worser form that should go to, that would have gone to the woman of burning, right? Which is a more severe punishment. But rather, we give them the penalty of strangulation. Okay. Whereas in the ordinary case of adultery, both man and woman are executed in the same manner. Strangulation. In the case of the daughter of a Kohen, the man is not actually with the same method as she through burning, but rather through the usual method of strangulation. This is derived from the following pasuk. It says regarding the Kohen, she profanes her father, in fire she shall be burnt. Remember we talked about that? From which the Gemara derives, she is executed through the special method of burning, but the man with whom she cohabited is executed through the usual method of strangulation. The last Mishnah of Sanhedrin teaches that if witnesses testify that a certain man and a Nesua daughter of a Kohen, she was Nesua to another man, and she's acting immorally now, committed adultery, and these witnesses were found to be zomim, then although the witnesses plotted to have two people killed, the man and the woman, and the form of execution she would have received would have been the more severe than his. And there is a rule that when someone is liable in two forms of execution, he's put to death with the more severe form. Oh. If you do a crime and you did multiple punishments, you get the more severe. So what should they have gotten as Edim Zomim?
Burning.
Still, the witnesses are in fact put to death with his form of execution, which is the less severe. How do we know that? It's from a pasuk. Derived from the verse regarding the Zomim witness, and you shall do, what's the Zomim? You shall do to him as he planned to do to his brother.
No,
what is that saying? Which implies his brother and not to his sister.
Yeah,
so when does that fit in? In a case in which the witness is conspired to have a couple put to death for a sin of illicit cohabitation, and this form of death differs from hers, the witness are punished with his form and not hers. You follow what's going on over here?
Yeah.
Since normally they should have got burning because you give them the worst punishment. Right. But the Torah had a special pasuk that says you do to him what he wanted to do his brother, not what he wanted to do to his sister. That's the last Mishnah. So what do you have? A case of Edim Zomim where we don't give them the punishment that they were supposed to get. Thus, the immediately preceding Mishnah to ours discussed case in which the law of reciprocal punishment and Zomim is modified somewhat in that the witnesses are not made to suffer the full extent of the punishment. And guess what? Now this Mishnah is picking up from there. So what's this Mishnah? And now there's another case of Edim Zomim where you don't get the exact punishment you should have gotten. And that's what it says. Now we read our Mishnah. Now we're explaining our Mishnah now. There are Edim Zomim, another case of Edim Zomim. Shein also in Din Hazama Kalikar. You don't do any Hazama. The last Mishnah says we give him a little bit. Instead of burning, we strangulate him.
Right.
Here, we're not going to make the guy a son of a Grusha. We're not going to make him go to Golas, but rather, Ella Malkus Arboim. You give him 40 lashes. And what's the case? Now I know, Ketzad, what's the case? We testify this guy, Shuben Grusha Ben Chalutza. This guy's the son of a divorcee or a Chalutza. So, Ein Omrim Yasa Zeben Grusha Ben Chalutza. We don't say he becomes a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Ella Lokes Arboim. He gets lashed 40. So that's what the Mishnah is saying. Kate said, give me another case where the Hazama is not done exactly. And that fits like a glove to the last Mishnah. Mm-hmm. The last one says we didn't give him the full extent of the punishment, but we gave the lesser one because of a pasuk. So let's have another example where we really don't give any punishment at all of that severity at all, but a lesser kind of lashes, and it's following that up.
Except for one point.
Yeah.
You just said it. The case before is a pasuk. So we don't.
Okay, so guess what? Guess what, Shelley? Tomorrow, the next line of Gemara say, where did you get that from? I need a pasuk for this too.
Okay.
That's exactly the next question of Gemara.